Welcome back, Survivor fans. It is episode 9 of season 25 of Survivor. We are in the Philippines this season, not in Samoa, in case you missed it. I am Ralph with my co-host Chris, and we are going to recap and... Oh man, I should have this ready.
Ready? We don't do preparations.
I know,
on this
but
podcast.
That little thing I had, but like it was very Clyde Frazier.
Analyze,
chastise.
Yeah. Analyze, chastise.
Improvise, clearly.
Summarize.
So we're a Survivor podcast, although we sometimes don't sound like it. We've had very busy weeks. So
we're really just a telephone conversation.
It's a chilly Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, we're a little late to the game this week, scheduling conflicts, etc., so apologies to the listeners. Usually the reason you're late listening to us is because I just forget to post the episode. This time we're actually recording it late.
Right, there are several Wednesdays where we do get it recorded. It's just a matter of the business of post-production and posting and file sharing and...
Yes.
Not in that order,
obviously. Most of which takes place in a timely manner, and then I remember on, like, Sunday morning, oh, I haven't posted it yet, I should take care of that.
Yeah. That's all right. I don't hold it against you. You know, we have the best fans in the world, Chris. They're patient.
All 50 of them are very loyal.
Hey, it's 50 more than we had 3 years ago.
Indeed.
Another solid episode, I thought. You know, there's a lot of mystery heading into Tribal, and plenty to talk about. Again, we're a little fuzzy in the details 2 or 3 days out, but you know, we'll do our best to kind of stay on top of things. But I will say, my campaign to restore the meaning of under the bus has to continue. In the last time on, Jeff mentioned something about Lisa throwing Malcolm and his idol under the bus. How do you throw an idol under a bus? How do you blame the idol for something? You can't.
Well, at least figuratively, it's difficult to throw an idol under the bus.
Literally, you could.
Literally, is
in
easy.
In terms of the meaning of the phrase to throw something under the bus.
I think we've found that we really need, like, some sort of intricacies of language podcast to go along with
this. This is it. I think we offer that service on this podcast.
Well, we do.
In the guise.
It's a miss, but, you know, all of the people out there looking for a good, you know, grammar dissection podcast, you know, they're never going to find it because they don't realize they need to be searching for a Survivor podcast.
Not a Survivor podcast. This.
Well, right. Yeah, this one in particular, yeah.
Right. All right, so cut to camp, and Penner comes back, and he's confused, because apparently his vote for Abby... Well, A, it really pissed off Abby, and B, it was not the right vote.
Yeah, at first... Well, the funny thing was, is at first he was kind of talking about some stuff. I have a note here about Plan B. I don't even know what that means.
He said in confessional that there was no Plan B... That it was chaotic.
Oh,
that's
right. Yeah, which is just so strange, seeing as he was the one that was all,
let's do
the thing
B.
that we came here to do, talked about doing. Yeah.
Right, yes. Right. And apparently that was Abby to him?
And then he realized, oh, so I'm the one who blew it. Ha ha. Right. Of course, it doesn't really matter, because the tie could have gotten messy. Especially because, you know... If you have that tie, both Scoopin' and Penner were pretty loosely affiliated with their voting block, so you could have easily had another tie in the revote with both
with
of them
switch.
Flipping or something, you know? Like, with Penner being like, all right, well, fine, I'll just get rid of Jeff Kent, and Scoopin' being like, okay, fine, we'll just get rid of Pete, you know? I would really love to see that happen once.
Or to just have Penner and Scoopin talk about it openly, they're right there, be like, oh.
That's true. Yeah, given how that tribal council went, I mean, right, they could have just done show of hands voting.
Yeah. So, do you buy it? Do you buy it that Penner genuinely didn't know, or do you think there was some gameplay there? Although, I suppose confessionally would have been upfront about
That's what I was just going to say, exactly. I feel like if there was gameplay, he probably would have, you know, patted himself on the back about it in a confessional. Not because I feel like he's a self-aggrandizing person, but because I think anybody would pat themselves on the back about it in confessional. And it didn't seem... Either he did and they felt like it wasn't worth airing, or more likely, he didn't because it was probably genuine.
If Pete goes home, is he in trouble next week?
What do you mean?
Like, if instead of Jeff Kent, Pete had gone home last night. Or the, whatever, the previous episode.
Oh.
Would Penner have been in trouble in this episode?
I don't know. Why would he be in trouble?
Well, I'm just saying, like, would he still... Because, essentially, last time we talked...
Yeah.
You know, the only way he escaped going home was by winning immunity.
Right.
Right? If...
Oh, I don't think he would need it this time. Home. Yeah, I don't think he would be as... Yeah. He'd be in a better place if Pete had gone home.
Right. So it was in his benefit to know that the vote was for Peter and to vote that way. So, clearly, if there was any gameplay involved, it was the wrong gameplay.
Yeah. Well, no, except for the fact that, you know, except for what I mentioned last time, which was that, you know, Scoopin' is really the determining factor, and in fact... If he swings to your side, that gives you a two-vote advantage, so he can throw away his vote. Because the only way Pete goes home is if Scoopin votes for him, and if Scoopin votes for him, Penner can throw away his vote, and Pete still goes home. So yeah. There's that little bit of, like, you know, second or third level play there that you could be doing, but I don't think that's what it was at all.
Yeah, I don't think.
At
so
least
either.
Not in that. At least not in that sense.
Right.
Maybe it was. Who knows.
All right, so the next scene we see is Lisa trying to save face with Malcolm. Or did Malcolm approach her?
Approach. Hard I mean, they're coming back from Tribal Council. They're all with each other anyway. It probably just comes up.
Either way, Lisa/Blair tells Malcolm that she feels terrible and that, like, she tried something and it blew up. And Malcolm, shockingly, maybe not shockingly considering it's Malcolm, but says...
Yeah, he seems like a pretty level dude.
Yeah, he understands, like, what happened, and...
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he said he was happy about it, but, you know, he did say that he understands
right,
like,
he gets it.
That she was attempting to do.
He has that attitude that we have long discussed appreciating, and that's that he realizes it's a game, and it's not like some personal attack on Malcolm because she hates Malcolm or something like that.
Right. Yeah. This is just about getting further in the game and eliminating who she thought was a threat, and more than anything, it's a compliment that when people consider you to be a threat.
Right.
But she goes on to say that, you know, maybe this game's bigger than me, and she should think about going back to being the church lady that we had. You know, the impression that we had of her was prior to last week's episode.
Yeah. Throughout this episode, she she gets. I don't know what the right word. I guess it's a metaphor because she. Or not a metaphor, but she talks about the game being bigger than her, but then her being bigger than the game. I was very lost in these confessional discussions she would have, or not discussions, monologues, I guess, that she would have.
I feel like confessional is therapy for her. It's just time for her to, like, get it out. And
I didn't know what the heck she was trying to say, because she literally in back-to-back sentences claimed that at one point that the game was bigger than her, but that she was bigger than the game. Which, then I guess, you know, if we're allowing for equality, then they're just at the same size.
In volume or mass?
Either way, it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Because if you were allowing for equality, you shouldn't be saying bigger than. You should be saying bigger than or equal to, or not smaller than, or something.
good.
Sorry, that's great. Just the mathematician in me coming out here.
Right, and the volume and mass comment was the scientist.
Exactly, so right. We both very, went very to much our, the our teachers place. Here. Went to right. our went to our home corners here.
Penner goes to his home corner of manipulation. I think he's very good at it. And,
this was beautiful.
It was
artistic.
Which made it hard to watch because Lisa was totally in his hand.
Oh yeah.
And he was just.
Well, I mean, I feel like
Is part of it genuine?
Oh, I think there is a lot that's genuine about it because, you know,
but he's using it.
Right, exactly. I mean, the note that I wrote down is first off is that he's great at this. Like Malcolm was good in how he handled the thing with Blair. Penner was great.
Right.
And
he
was telling her exactly what she wanted to hear. This is the Chris Daugherty, something like that. I can't remember.
Daugherty.
Recipe from, like, whatever it was. Not Guatemala. I can't remember.
Oh, I was thinking of American Idol.
No. There's the guy who was up against six women in, like, at the final seven. It was him and six women. And they were, and not only was it him against six women, it was six women who had openly expressed having a women's alliance, and he cracked it.
You're right, yeah.
And he cracked it by being very open and very sincere with them. And so I felt like, I mean, I felt like Penner was being sincere. He is a guy who comes from the same industry, or at least in the, in what they're discussing, the same industry. You know, they're talking about her life as a child star, et cetera. So he understands
what it is to live a life of trying to please everyone and feeling the pressure of being a provider and
especially at a young age and
feeling a need to be liked and constantly being under a microscope.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Nothing I can relate to, but you know, it's still touching. Right.
But yeah, it seems like a very genuine moment that simultaneously is wonderful strategy as well. And I think, and to be fair to both sides, I think Penner is acutely aware of that.
Which, again, makes it a little distasteful. Again, you know, you appreciate it from a game player perspective, but it is still a little distasteful.
I don't think it's distasteful. I mean, I mean, yes, it happens. Because the thing is I think...
We've been accused of appreciating the slime on the show.
Right, but I'm not, I mean,
I don't want to be the lowest common denominator that we've been accused of.
But it would be slime if it would be slime if it was completely disingenuous and he was doing this. You know, if he was just doing it just to make her feel better, to manipulate her.
Or worse, just to make her cry.
Right, and yeah, and then was going to walk away to the confessional and be like, that girl is, you know, one stick short of a bundle or so, you know, I mean.
Right. Right, yeah. Grape short of a bunch.
Right. So, I mean, like I said, I think it's genuine. I mean, I could see how it's a little bit uneasy watching it, but I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, ultimately. It just so happens that it also is really good for his strategy.
And excellent television.
And great television, yes. Indeed.
Oh. All right. Moving on?
Indeed.
All right, we had a reward challenge of going through some obstacles, a mud pit,
crawl through the mud,
a rice pit, purely to cover them in rice.
Right.
I see no other purpose for it.
Right.
And then the dig for the bags of balls. Now, we ended up with an untelevised pick'em for two teams of four with an odd man out and. And we got to see Abby squatting on that bench, and it was
to everyone's great surprise, Abby ends up not participating.
Hey, somehow that came back to bite her in the butt, Chris. You know, it's shocking.
I mean, how many? She's still got to be like five challenges she's participated in now. I mean, maybe one or two more than that. But it, like, it's amazing that this deep into the game, she's not even hit double digit challenges.
Yeah, and we had two for many of the episodes.
Right, exactly. When you're getting almost two per episode, and she's sat out more than she's participated in.
We've had at least 15 at this point, right?
Yeah, 15 challenges. Maybe she's participated in seven. Maybe.
Yeah. No, it's less than that.
No, I know. I'm saying, I don't think it is that many. I'm saying, but at best, it's that many.
Okay. And the team split along the alliance lines, with really only Scoop ending up.
Well, because
pick'em. He voted with them. Yeah.
I mean, it was a pick'em, so I feel like that wasn't a surprise that they ended up in along alliance lines. It wasn't like a random draw or anything like that.
Well, let's stop burying the lead here. The lead here is that Jonathan Penner, my horse number two, after a horrible horse number one, developed the winning strategy of pulling all the bags out of the mud before he advanced, which at the time you were watching Pete shoot, no, you were watching Scoop and shoot ahead, and you're like, he's getting left in the dust, or he's getting left in the rice, right?
Right.
See what I did there?
No. Yeah.
Right. He's getting left behind, and the red team's falling behind, or whatever color they were, and it ended up being their savior, because every single person after that ran through the pit, grabbed a bag on their way out, and was on their merry way instead of being stuck in the mud. I did it again. Look.
What? You know? Stuck in the mud? Yeah, sorry. Thanks. You caught me while I was trying to look up the number of challenges that have taken place here.
You're doing the research. Why isn't Victor around?
I know. Yeah, right. Where is our
Michael,
staff?
Michael from Southern California.
Yeah, Mike K. Mike K. from SoCal.
Why aren't you doing our research?
I don't know. We haven't heard from Mike K from SoCal in a while. This is your shout out.
I hope he's watching the season because it is as good as it's been.
Yeah.
All
right. But yeah, the Penner strategy was huge there. I mean, right when he started doing that, I thought this is going to be great. I mean, not only because he's the first one through and thus he can not only dig his bag out, but now he saves the time of like somebody else accidentally digging where he dug and wasting time, but also he's arguably the strongest in that group
okay.
of four.
Yeah. Maybe Carter, maybe.
So, you know, having him doing that digging is great. And plus, you know, I mean, once you find one, you have an idea about how deep, like, odds are they're all buried about equally deep.
Yeah.
So you have an idea of how far down you have
to go. This is a returning player who knows what's up, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. He, like, realizes there are edges
and
the challenge.
And then sticking them in the corners even smarter. I mean, like, I'm not just piling them up here so that they can end up getting buried again, but, like, throwing them into the corners where it's away from the rest of the mud, easy place for people to locate them. So good.
Strangely, they still blended in. It was amazing how much.
Yeah, one person had to actually ask. I think right, which corner? I don't see them.
Right, I think it was Carter. Yeah.
Yeah.
But or Malcolm, I don't know, whatever. Yeah. So Red runs away with it. You know, CBS tries to amp up the tension, but it was never close.
Yeah, the putting the balls in the hoop there. Like, there's one shot where you could see as they drew wide to put to show the last ball going in for them, you could actually see that Yellow did not have as many as they had purported. Like, I think they fudged that. Like,
yeah, no, I
it looked like there was only about five in yeah. Yellow's when Probst had actually called, like,
not
six and seven or something.
That's
like
that.
That's fine. Yeah.
I'm okay with being manipulated like that.
Sure.
The prize was really cool. The prize was really cool. They got to not only enjoy a feast, but they were representing the show, bringing a crate of school supplies and toys to poor Filipino children. And, of course, that touched me, you know,
sure.
helping out the motherland.
Sure.
I looked at the spread. It was natively accurate. It was no longer like ribs and potato salad. It was like, actual Filipino food. There was a whole pig, the lechon there. That was
nice.
That was really key. That's always key for a Filipino party, you know.
Okay.
My parents once had a fit about my grandmother wanting three pigs at her, like, 85th birthday party, but they really only needed one. But my grandmother's a trip like that. I don't know. And it was funny to see them interact, and it was really great. And, you know, Malcolm rededicated himself to being a teacher again. And, there's a scene where Jonathan is telling this group of kids his name.
Yes. His name is Normal.
My name is Jonathan. In the United States, my name is Normal. And the kids are like,
Normal. Hi, Normal.
What Jonathan is forgetting is that, you know, the Philippines was conquered by, you know, Europeans, namely the Spanish, for a long period of time. So, you know, names that are common in European society are not uncommon in the Philippines. And
sure.
I have a cousin named Jonathan, and for, you know, they wouldn't think that name was abnormal at all in the Philippines. So,
although if it was Spanish, shouldn't it be like Juan or something?
No. Like, there are Spanish variants, yes.
Juanathan?
Like, I was named after Santo Rafael, but Jonathan would, again, there's a very heavy, like, appreciation of America and American culture there, largely owing to the Americans liberating them from the Japanese and various other conquerors. So
I see. I know so very little about that sort of history.
Well, I'm here for this. You know, when they bring it to the PI, you know, I'm gonna help you out.
The PI?
Yeah, the PI. That's an actual thing. People call it that.
Call it PI?
Yeah, the Philippine Islands.
Oh, okay. It didn't even occur to me, Philippine Islands. I was like,
right, sorry.
Philippines? I was like, so the I is the second letter in the abbreviation?
No. Come on.
I get it now. Philippine Come Islands. Fair enough, yes.
Yeah. All right, so we cut back to camp, and it's the sad scene, and I loved that Artis was not planning on washing the rice off.
Yeah,
he stood there caked in mud and rice, and
right.
I'm not sure how we didn't get a shot of Scoopin
taking
the rice grains off of him like a chicken. Like, that would
well,
really
Scoopin
great.
Probably just went through that obstacle with his mouth wide open. and just got like nourished and while
let,
he was at
let
it.
Let the belly rice cooker do
right,
the
right, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, do you know how much indigestion you would have from that? It would be, ugh, it would be unbearable.
Gross.
It would be unbearable.
Yeah.
Pete and Abby are talking, and Abby shoots her death stare at Lisa / Blair and says, "Hopefully you're not going to be a double agent again." And just
she lays into her,
just opens up her can of whoop ass on
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she's such a bully. It's so ridiculous. And Abby has her head so far up her ass talking about stuff, and it's really funny to watch her. Like, she talks about everything like she knows exactly what's going on and really has no clue.
Here's the thing. Lisa is vulnerable to bullying.
Oh, I know. So she I guess maybe she so bullying. maybe Abby's smarter than I give her credit for.
I don't know if she's doing it on purpose, but
yeah,
I
think
that,
it's much more
what
coincidental.
She's doing is very effective for Lisa.
Yeah, I think it's much more coincidental that Abby just is a bully.
Yes.
And Lisa just happens to be on the island, and thus it works.
Yes.
But
yes.
I don't know.
She's the kind of person that doesn't want to be judged in a negative light, and a bully like thrives on that. You know?
Yeah, that's
thrives
true.
On that weakness. She says, "You're gullible and naive. You had no idea what to do, and we helped you." And
right. Yeah, it was an unimpressive moment for Abby and.
One of many.
I hope Lisa like starts to see the light here soon.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to
like,
be disappointing.
I feel like Abby's earned a spot on the villains tribe for whatever next heroes villains
right.
rehash we have going.
Yeah.
Just
I
as
guess
the
so.
The venom spitter, you know, you need someone like that.
Yeah.
You know, not the most backstabby person. She's very loyal to Pete, but you know, certainly in terms of giving you the biz, she can do it with the best of them.
Yep. That's for sure.
And Lisa is complaining, or well, Artis, first of all, you know, chimes in for the fourth time this season, and he recognizes the threat that Abby poses to what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
He's been, I guess, for his strategy, he's been smart, is just to kind of lay low and not upset everyone and kind of seem like the guy to take to the end and then maybe kind of make his case for not upsetting everyone at Tribal Council at the end, but... you know, he recognizes the threat that Abby posed and points that out.
Indeed.
And then Lisa mentions that as much as she is disgusted by some of the actions of her alliance mates, that she's concerned about what a flip would look like at the end. And
yeah, she...
She's really... It's really in her head.
Yeah, this game is torturing her. It's clear that it's torturing her. You know, she wants to just play it because she seems to love it, seems to be a fan of the show, and at the same time just can't seem to let her self-perception or her self-perceived exterior perception, I don't know if I'm putting that right, she can't let that, you know, she won't let that go. You know,
I mean, it's tough. This has always been the game. It's you will, you know, if you want to win, you're going to be getting the votes from the people that you helped in some way or other get there. So you have to do it in a way that does not cause animus.
Yeah, but that's not what it is, though. Like, this isn't Lisa having endgame foresight. This is Lisa just, like, having a wilting personality. This is Lisa having, like... I'd rather be the martyr and like go down with the ship than switch sides and risk the possibility that anybody, like jury member or random fan at home,
doesn't like her.
Think, you know, oh, she's disloyal,
right.
You know, like and not be okay with knowing of her own accord, like. That I'm the one most informed as to what's my best, what the best move is for me, and what the best decision is for me,
right.
And everybody else can go take a long walk off a short pier.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and I guess I'm just projecting onto her, but she does mention that. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it certainly is a part of the game. Is that foresight, worrying about what people on the jury are going to think of you, but like,
and it's the right time to start thinking about that.
Yeah, but I don't think that's what's happening here.
All right. Cut to the immunity challenge and thrown off by Jeff in black. I don't know. Have we seen this before?
Yeah, we have. He sprinkles it in, especially the last like two or three seasons.
And the trucker hat. The trucker hat.
Oh, the trucker hat's always been there.
Right.
Yeah, he's always had that. I've been like jealous of that hat for like a dozen seasons. I want one so badly.
What's stopping you? Production?
I don't. They don't make them. Yeah. They don't sell them anywhere. They just sell the buffs.
Have you tried tweeting at Probst?
I should. Actually, I think he does give away hats every once in a while. But it's like, you know, I gotta like...
Game-worn hats.
Yeah, right, game-worn. But I think ever since, gosh, what was his name? Cochran. Johnny Cochran. Ever since he called out Jeff on the... What was his line? It was something about, like, it's like talking to Jeff Probst about shirts that aren't blue.
Right.
Like, you're just not gonna get anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think ever since then, like...
They've been more conscious about it.
Yeah, he's gotten like a steady rotation to where I don't think I would bet it was probably somewhere between like a 40% and 60% range of his shirts are blue. whereas in the past it would have been like 85-90%.
Right, yeah. No, I get it. Alright. So it's I call this a dexterity challenge where it's just, you know, manual manipulation of something combined with endurance and balance and coordination and trying to roll six balls into six little small holes on the end of what looked like a pizza.
Yeah, sort of like a pizza
what do I call
spatula.
It? Yeah, big, you know, those big brick ovens pizza things. Yeah. That thing.
Yeah.
And it looked really tough.
This thing is very much akin to like those puzzles that you see in like the Sharper Image or like a games store where you have that little
dial
the
Lucite.
That or even, no, I was going to say just the little like Lucite cube that has some sort of contoured surface in it, and then you got to get the balls to come to a rest in each of the little holes, except that the holes, you know, sit along a curve, so it's difficult to make them stay.
Yeah. So what did Scoopin know that no one else knew?
Like, I don't know, but I think if Scoopin isn't there, like, this challenge might have taken, like, 6 hours. I mean, Pete was moving. I mean, Pete was the only one who was even close to Scoopin, and he lost two of his balls when he got to four.
Right, he went from four to two, yeah.
So, I mean, I think Scoopin just seemed to be just. I think it's just a steady hand and a quick, you know, a quick learn at it.
You're talking about the guy who injures himself the most having
right.
a steady hand.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is sort of an odd juxtaposition there.
Yeah, I don't think there was he would have been on the bottom of list of people that I've listed for chances to win this thing. It just it was out of left field. But
indeed,
good for him because I think it definitely still added a little layer of interestingness to what was going on. You know, just because he would have been, you know, he had the target on him at some point, didn't he, last time?
Sort of. I mean, Penner was the new target, but he became the target when Penner won last time.
Right.
But nonetheless, he's one of the two in the conversation, seemingly. So it was a good win for him, and he ran away with it. I mean, it wasn't close.
His reward was a relaxing afternoon, not having to scramble,
right.
and getting hit in the head by Abby with a coconut.
So, right.
You know, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
It was blunt trauma instead of bladed edged trauma,
right?
Or fiery trauma for him this week.
Yeah, that's much better, I guess. and Abby, you know, speaking of Abby, I think right after the challenge, you know, since Penner doesn't win, she starts talking about Penner being the next that needs to go home. And she, my favorite line is that she says he's a little too smart for his own good, and it just seems so funny coming out of her mouth, I guess, because. Like, I guess she's not too smart for her own good. She thinks she's too smart, and that's, I don't know.
That's not for her own good. I don't know.
Something along those lines. But
it's
it felt a little pot calling the kettle black or something there. I mean, I guess that is what it is. She is too smart for her own good. She thinks she thinks she's really smart, and so she tries to use that to, she thinks she's doing all these great things when really all she's doing is just making people hate her. You know, unless she suddenly at Final Tribal is gonna like turn into this giant charmer and be like, "Joke's on you guys! I got to the final three because I made you all hate me. I'm really not this evil person or whatever." Not that that's going to work.
That'd be a hard sell.
It would be a hard sell. And it's not going to work, but, you know, that was sort of the Richard Hatch approach.
Even
right?
if you're not an evil person, it's going to be hard for me to like you enough to
vote
give
for
you my
it.
Vote.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
of course. But that was the Richard Hatch approach.
You need to watch Borneo. Like, I don't know if you can reference Richard Hatch without having seen it. I mean, it's been 12 years since I've seen it, so it's even hard for me to reference. But Kelly was not a... She seemed very backstabby and very, like, you know, whatever it took. You know, like, it was like, dealing with her, you didn't know what you were getting. But with Richard, it was like he was a threat, and you knew he was a threat, but he still made it to the end anyways. So people respected him for that.
Sure.
All right, so Pete's not concerned when Abby raises the possibility that they may have traitors on their alliance. And, you know, Abby's basically kind of begging Pete to scramble. But Pete's like, I'm good.
We're all good, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what if you're Pete in that situation, you know, like, is doing something too much? Like, would that potentially push someone away? Like,
Based on what's happened, I mean, I don't think there was any way Pete was going to be able to scramble well there, because Pete is already received as abrasive by everybody not named Abby and Artis.
He should have found a way to be, because I don't think personally that is what he's like, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he is, but he's already received that way, is what I'm saying. But he also didn't really have much reason to worry, because at the last tribal council, Scoopin voted with them, you know? So it seems like everything's hunky-dory.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, there's some wisdom in that the less scrambling your alliance does, the better it looks in terms of, like, how solid it is, you know?
Yeah.
So if you're
not
going around
much to
campaigning...
That. Say that again?
If you're going around campaigning, it can look bad to the people that are on your alliance, or it can look like you're planning something that isn't what you were planning.
Right,
like
that's
that there's
true.
Something else in the works.
Yeah.
It depends on the people you're dealing with, you know. And I think it's situationally the right thing to do.
Well,
and
I mean, the person. Go ahead.
I mean, in this case, you know, it appeared as if going into tribal. That Scoopin and Lisa had not made up their minds, that they seemed open to being swayed by whatever was said at Tribal Council.
I don't know about that. I think they had more or less made up their minds, or they were, if they were going to make their minds up at Tribal, I don't think it was going to necessarily have much to do with what happened at Tribal. But I mean, Scoopin has already seemed to feel like Pete is abrasive and already feel like he doesn't like Pete, you know, just because Scoopin was kind of with RC for a little while there, and they were on the outs. So I don't think there's much that could have been done anyway to turn things back in their favor, even if he had recognized that he needed to. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just wanted to, you know, raise the point that there is some value sometimes in laying low and being cool and, you know, saying that everything's fine when it may not be.
Yeah, I mean, what he's really lucky, though, that they didn't decide to go after him, which I thought was actually kind of foolish on their part. You know, that...
Because you don't think Abby's ever going to give it up to Pete.
No, I don't think there's any chance she's handing him the idol, and I don't know why they would ever think that there was any chance.
Well,
of
yeah, they made the connection that, like, she's never going to give it to Artis, so they just need to go that
right,
step
yeah,
further.
I mean,
that she's never going to give it to Pete.
She comes off to everybody as completely selfish, so why would you ever expect her to, like, make a move like that to try to further herself in the game by giving away an idol? Like, that just does not seem like something that's in her playbook at all.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you at all.
Yeah.
Not disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, just like we said, Denise was sort of the motivation behind going with Artis on the theory that he will never be given the immunity by Abby. And I thought that was,
right.
I guess, for me, that was a smart move. I don't know that Pete's, you know.
It's smart in that sense. I think, but on the flip side, if you get rid of what, like, it's easier to blindside the guy that you want to get rid of.
Yeah.
When there's a lot of people than when there's a few people. And Pete's the guy you want to get rid of, right? Out of those three, Pete's the guy you want out.
Yeah.
And so now it's more likely that she might actually give Pete the idol. Because she realizes that they're in dire straits and, you know, like...
Here's my response to that. If you can get Lisa, then you can split the votes on those two, 6-2, with go 3-3-2.
Oh, next vote? Good to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
if you can get
her. Yeah, but I think you can. I think at this point, you tell her, look, Artis is gone. You don't have to play with them. Right. You know, come on over. Split the votes with us. Let's get rid of them. And I think she would find that appealing in a way, you know?
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is I think that, like, well, first off, there was never really a chance. You have to recognize that there was not really a good chance that Abby was going to give Pete the idol anyway. But if you vote out Pete and get him out versus and leave Abby and Artis behind, there's a less likely chance of Abby giving away the idol there than if you vote out Artis and leave Pete and Abby behind.
Okay.
You see what I mean? That's what I mean.
I'm not fine. Yeah. I'm saying it may not matter.
That's very likely.
All right. So we cut to Penner with his last stand with Lisa, and it was one that I will remember.
It's beautiful. As community fans, we can certainly appreciate where this came from. I mean, if I didn't know any better, I'd have said that was our boy Abed talking to Lisa there.
It was, hey, let's talk about what this episode will look like, Lisa. And it was amazing.
Yes.
Because he says, what will the narrative of Survivor Season 25 be? Who will the good guys be? The bad guys? Who will the audience root for? And it was, I mean, I would have voted for him for president at that point. Like, he had me.
Yeah, it was really good. The one error in his ways, I think, is that he talked about good guys and bad guys. And that I think strikes really deep a chord with Lisa and makes her think about loyalty. And, you know, that's because that in her mind is good, is what's a good guy and what's a bad guy is, you know, keeping your word and that sort of thing. And so I feel like he should have steered clear of that.
Well, how would you have phrased it? Like the audience would like the, you know, Excalibur and not the X-Tandang.
Oh, you talk about it as, you know, the key is that you just talk about Abby as a villain and Pete as a villain and her as, you know, you don't talk about it as good guys and bad guys. You talk about it as her, as Lisa as a protagonist and, you know, sort of the metamorphosis of, you know, living under the rule and not seeing how things could be better elsewhere, and then eventually, you know, starting to realize that, you know, that those in power, you know, don't necessarily deserve to be, and being a part of the revolution or something like that.
Yeah, something that appeals to the underdog. Appealing to the underdog in the story, come from behind, you know. Yeah. Right. And of course, just like in last week, he punctuates it with, I'm not trying to get in your head.
Right, I know, yeah. Penner's got to start tuning into this podcast. Like, if there's anything you don't do, you don't start anything, any of your persuasive discussions with, I'm not trying to change your vote here, but let's just talk about what might change your vote. You know?
Yeah. I think tuning into our podcast while he's on the island would be a bit of a challenge, but...
We need to hook him up with Shane. Who had the wooden BlackBerry? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe for his fourth go around on the show, he'll be more prepared after hearing what
exactly.
We have to say.
Exactly. Yeah. Or we just need Shane to get, you know, to set up like, you know, Shane's shack of
wooden electronics. Island electronics.
Yeah, exactly. Pick up like just pick up a little wooden iPod Shuffle so he could download the podcasts, you know. You want something light there. You don't want to be burdened by something heavy to carry.
How's it
going to
sink it? I guess you got to.
People
sink
might.
Shuffle.
I mean, you get like an iPod Classic. People might think that you're carrying around the idol in your pocket, and that could be dangerous.
right. The rest of the scramble involved Penner lobbying Scoopin to the point of telling him who he was voting for, which had an element of danger in it, and that Scoopin could...
Why do you think that was dangerous?
I don't know. The more I think about it, and, you know, this is your story to tell, but there was a... tell them about the Scoopin Twitter thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There was... Yeah, last time there was... You know, and I even questioned his decision to go with the Tandang group and vote out Jeff Kent. And it was brought to my attention one way or another. He tweeted about this afterwards when I guess some people had tweeted at him, you know, questioning the move. And his question basically to everybody was, how is it bad that I voted out a guy whose primary and very openly stated goal was to get rid of returning players? And he hits the nail on the head there. He's exactly right. If Jeff Kent's had one theme, it's been, I don't want returning players around. You know, he partnered with Penner for a little bit as a necessity, or as a seeming necessity, but clearly was ready to slit his throat the second he had enough people around that he didn't need to keep Penner around. So, you know, Scoopin was definitely right about that. How does that fit in, though, with Penner talking to?
Well,
Scoopin,
no, I mean, I guess at the time it seemed dangerous, given that I thought Scoopin would maintain his alliances with the other three, but...
Oh, with Tandang, when in reality his decision to vote out Kent probably had more to do with the fact that Kent was targeting Scoopin and Penner than the fact that he wanted to stay loyal to Tandang.
The final scramble was the best part. It was like, okay, we've heard both sides lobby, or at least... the losing side lobbying the swing voters, and the swing voters Scoopin and Lisa are out in the water having their final little discussion of which way their votes are going to go. And you know, Scoopin kind of flat out asks her, which, you know, is she thinking about flipping, and she honestly responds with yes. So you know, the way things shook out, it was an interesting sort of dialogue to watch happen.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, the way the votes end up going, I think, is interesting, because, well, we can get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's go ahead and cut the tribal.
One other thing that I thought was odd is I was surprised that there was no talk of Malcolm giving his idol to Penner. I mean, not that those two have been tight or anything, but Malcolm clearly is aligned with Penner now, right? And Carter and Denise.
Yeah.
And they need a way to get that leg up, and... Mm-hmm. You know, I think if you look at those group, you know, if you take one Tandang member away, particularly if you take one of the three core people, Artis, mm-hmm. Abby, or Pete,
mm-hmm.
and you're left with a 4-on-4, I think it's very clear that the non-Tandang group is the tighter bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And you would take that 4-on-4 situation there, even not having the idol. And so I'm surprised that there wasn't any discussion of giving Penner that idol so that they could then just vote out whoever they want, regardless of whether they have the numbers or not, and then move on from there 4-4, but with the Tandang 4 being a very split 2-2, mm-hmm. of you know, that, mm-hmm. where you could easily get Blair and mm-hmm. Scoopin to come over.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you. I had that in my notes at the end when Jeff called out the idols. I said, well, it does make a whole lot of sense here for Malcolm to play it because they know exactly where those votes are going.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I had that in my notes too. I don't understand. Who knows? You know, ultimately the longer that Hidden Mutant Idol lives, the more power it gains, you know, in terms of how much further it gets, how much closer it gets you to the final tribal council. So, I'm guessing Malcolm's banking on that, you know? Like,
yeah.
The longer he can wait till he absolutely has to play it, the better, you know?
Right.
You know, even if the vote went against him this week, he's
Penner
always
was out.
Yeah, he's always a threat to win the immunity challenge. Always.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
So he's gotta keep his hopes alive, and if he can ride that to the final tribal council, then he's like a lock to win, you know?
Right, that's true. That's true.
I don't know. Just some thoughts.
I love Tribal Council. I mean, It seems like Probst knows, like, all he has to do is needle Abby, and he'll just get everything he needs.
Yeah, and Abby can't help herself.
Exactly, you know, she can't whatsoever.
She makes the faces, she says really stupid stuff, you know, like, she's a dream.
She even tries to claim that she's somehow, like, showing grace towards...
towards I showed Lisa. You grace.
There is nothing graceful about you.
I was graceful.
Nothing, exactly. You are the antithesis of graceful on this show. You are about as abrasive as there is.
That's right. She's as abrasive as Brillo. Or she's as graceful as Brillo.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, is there much more to talk about at Tribal besides the vote? I don't think there is.
Yeah, I mean, I just liked how people, the language that some of the people use, I guess I really liked. Penner using the term fulcrum votes.
Oh, yeah, he's been using fulcrum all episode, yeah. He got
right. Why not
he got
swing?
Into that.
Why not? What's wrong with swing? Like, you know.
I was wondering about, I mean, I liked it. I liked that he used it once, but then when he went to that well one too many times for me, which, as I said, I actually said this when we were watching it, and Stacy looked at me like, whatever, you have your words that you've turned to
it
all
the
time.
You do. Words that you turn to. It's true.
Yeah, I definitely use the word ultimately a lot. I don't know what other ones off the top of my head.
It's because it's Ultimate Frisbee.
Stacy, I don't think that's why, but I don't know. Stacy just yelled at me from the other room and said I use the word nuance a lot, or at least the last couple of weeks I have.
She's listening. I love it.
Yeah, she's getting the director's edit over there.
I love it. I love it. It's great.
Not that there's any difference between the director's cut and what we post.
Hey, man, there's a lot of recuts and maybe... Okay. No, let's not say that what gets put out there is any kind of finished product, because it sure as heck ain't.
Right, exactly. I was really surprised. So the vote, I thought for sure it was Penner was going home.
Yes.
Because once
we heard a fourth one.
Exactly. Once Penner got the fourth vote, because you assumed that Scoopin and Blair were voting together.
Were a block, yes.
And thus, once Planner got a fourth vote, you thought for sure he's getting a fifth vote.
Yes.
So I was shocked. And I was even more shocked, and I don't know, I guess I shouldn't have been now in hindsight, but that it was Scoopin that flipped and not Lisa. Because I felt like the way Tribal Council went there, I felt like it was much more likely that they both went in planning to vote for Penner, and Lisa flipped after all of the glares from Abby, as opposed to Lisa holding and Scoopin flipping.
Maybe they both went in thinking they were going to vote artists, and then she flipped.
You could be exactly right. You could be right. She might have gotten bullied into flipping back.
She's open to that. She's totally vulnerable to bullying, and just being like, shut up, I voted with you.
Right.
Even to her detriment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like those days are numbered. They have to be, you know? Like, we have to be headed for a boring episode next time, you know, where, like, one either they split
where
the
vote. Where she joins the flip and it's just
like,
artists.
We have
and,
to be in for that.
Or, I mean, just Pete and Abby
like,
left.
Nothing else makes sense to me at this point.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily, because you could have... you could have Pete win immunity, and then Abby's got her idol.
Right.
So it could be
that
could make
messy.
Things interesting. Although not really, because then probably
then
just
they just
Blair.
Vote out Lisa.
Yeah, they probably just vote out Lisa.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's what you get for not joining. Yeah. See you later.
Exactly. Yeah. Here's what your loyalty bought you.
Right.
Yep. Indeed.
All right, so Artis went out. You know, we won't miss him, but he was. You know, I guess he was graceful in his exit. You know,
he was
mentioned that you got to be smiling leaving here, so that was good.
Indeed.
He arrived at Ponderosa, and RC left a little RC cloud of shaped cloud of dust where she was, and just headed the opposite direction. Like she wanted no part of Artis.
Oh really? Oh, I haven't watched that video. I watched the Jeff videos and the RC videos. I haven't watched the
first artist video. Like Jeff welcomes them. They walk into the little cafeteria, and then you see RC in the background. And as they're walking towards her, she just walks in the other direction.
Oh, when artist comes in?
Yeah, it was the cold shoulder.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
She's got
which is definitely the opposite of with Jeff. When Jeff got there, like she was
she's
chewing
just like,
his ear off.
Like, why didn't you do it?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and my favorite line was Jeff finally gets alone in his room and starts starts grooming himself. But the first thing he says to the camera is, "Wow, RC can talk."
Well,
which is
can.
True. They gave her four separate video posts
because she filled it. That's
Ponderosa.
Why.
Exactly, because she can talk.
Because she can talk.
And Kent not really interested in talking that much. So
no.
He only got
but when he did talk, he said some really interesting things. So if you have not watched the Ponderosa videos yet, watch at least the Jeff Kent.
Yeah, there's some Ponderosa fun ones video. In there to watch.
Yeah. Did you watch the season where they made a band? It was the, I think it was the Heroes Villain season. They made a band.
Did you just say villains?
Villains.
Oh, but did you? But I mean, did you?
I think I
say that?
Misspoke and said villain. I may.
That's really funny because I just went to a play at school. It's the student run production, but it's a play called Almost Maine, and part of in it, there's a kid who gets a tattoo that was supposed to say villain, but he accidentally gets a
villain.
Tattoo that says villain. Yeah, that was a funny little.
Hey, you're just bumping into random people. I'm saying things. You
I
know
am.
About.
This is. This I'm is having a very.
I'm
having a very like chaos theory week here or something.
Serendipity.
Yeah, that too, I guess. Yeah. All right. Should we? Shall we wrap it here?
Yeah, let's wrap it. Chris, hey, where can they find us online?
Yeah, our RSS feed is at tc.vanb.net. You can email us. You can email us. The address is podcast@tc.vanb.net, and our Twitter handle, which actually we did get tweeted at a couple times in the last week by it was by Victor, the aforementioned Victor, but our Twitter handle is Tribal Podcast. So look us up and give us a reason to tweet because we haven't in like 6 months.
Hey, I got reasons. Find the password. I got reasons.
There you go.
All right. Anyways, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week for the boring recap of what should be a boring episode. Thank you.
Indeed.
Bye.